This message was recorded live at Lighthouse Christian Center in Puyallup, Washington, and is designed to inspire and encourage you in your Christian journey. To find out more about Lighthouse, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org.
Guys, I can remember my first job after graduating from college. I had worked all the way through college. I'd worked at Safeway, you know, and now it's time for me to be a school teacher. And so I had applied and applied, and finally one school called me at the end of August and said, "Yeah, you have the job now." I had 2 weeks to prepare. Now remember, this was before internet, okay? I'll just say it that way. And so here I am. I'm fresh out of school, no experience. Everything I'm going to do, I had to figure out. And the terror was palpable. I mean, it was big. First, you spend your energy getting the job. Then you have to actually do the job. And I didn't know much about that. And so I had this whole issue of fear and excitement running at the same time. Most of us, though, have felt something like that. In the middle of some change or some transition where there's possibilities here. There are things that could happen. So that's great. That's exciting. But we also feel the fear of just what change will bring. How will it all work out? And in fact, I've observed before that the Chinese symbol for crisis is made up of two symbols. One of the symbols is danger, and the other one is opportunity. And so that's what many times crises, change, transitions bring. There's both danger and opportunity at the same time. We're excited about the opportunities, and we're scared about the danger. And so many, many times, if we're not careful, sometimes we don't walk through that change or that crisis in a way that we get God's very best. So guys, change is inevitable. Change is a good thing. John Maxwell said it this way: all change does not represent progress, but without change, there will be no progress. He's right about that. The changes that come in our lives, the crises, the transitions, they're part of often progress in our lives. So change isn't our enemy, it's our friend often, but in whatever transition, whatever change, whatever you're going through, God wants you to see you make progress. And I want to see you get God's best in the midst of whatever is happening in your life that is difficult. So the changes, the transitions, all the things that are going on, we can find God's best in the midst of that. And that's really what 2 Kings is all about. Because Elisha is going through a transition, okay? And we're going to see some commitments that Elisha makes in the middle of his transition that help him get God's best in the middle of the change that he's going through. So I want us to read this, and we're going to start, though, with thinking about the first commitment that Elisha makes. And that first commitment that he makes, I believe, is that you commit yourself to persevere even though tested. You want to get God's best in the middle of whatever change you're going through? Commit to persevere. Let's read it in 2 Kings, look what it says. Now, when the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind, now, right there, we got to stop. Whirlwind is not the usual way of going to be with the Lord. Of course, the usual way is death, okay? But God thought so much of Elijah that he decided to take him up to heaven supernaturally. Pretty cool gig if you can get it, okay? Elijah and Elisha were traveling to Gilgal. Now, who are these guys? Remember, Elijah, God's number one prophet in Israel. He used him many, many times to protect the nation and to guide the nation. And Elisha is just his servant, his protege, the guy who was kind of next in line. Look at verse 2. And Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here, for the Lord has told me to go to Bethel." But Elisha says, "Surely as the Lord lives and you yourself live, I will never leave you." And so they went out to Bethel. The group of prophets, now this group of prophets probably, or they're kind of like junior prophets, kind of like seminary students. That's who they were. Well, they were from Bethel. They came to Elisha and said, "Don't you know that the Lord is going to take your master away from you today?" "Quiet," Elisha says. Of course I know it. Then Elijah said to Elisha, stay here, for the Lord has told me to go to Jericho. But Elisha replied, surely as the Lord lives, you yourself live, I will never leave you. So they went on together to Jericho. Then the group of prophets from Jericho came to Elisha and said, don't you know the Lord is going to take your measure away from you today? Quiet. Of course I know it. Then Elijah said to Elisha, stay here, for the Lord has told me to go to the Jordan River. But Elisha replied, as surely as the Lord lives, and you yourself live, I will never leave you. So they went on together. 50 men from the group of prophets also went and watched from a distance as Elijah and Elisha stopped beside the Jordan River. So here are these 50 prophets up on a hill kind of watching what's going on. Guys, what this story demonstrates, of course, is first that Elisha is persevering in the midst of what for him is a crisis. And make no mistake about it, this is a crisis. Elijah is finishing his ministry. He's about to leave the planet via a fantastic retirement perk called the whirlwind. God is going to take him up. This statement begins the story, and Elisha's crisis revolves around the fact that his boss is leaving. And that boss is one that has been used of God. Israel will be left without the great Elijah. So Elisha wants to replace him. The Lord has even told him that he was going to replace him. And yet, it's happening. And so for Elisha, this must have felt like the world was crumbling around him. But change does that, doesn't it? We get into some sort of change. We get into some sort of transition. We just wonder, is everything going to be okay? Is this going to work out? And anxiety can mount up. There will usually, by the way, in the middle of that anxiety, there will be some distractors kind of distracting you from what you need to persevere on. And ironically, in this case, it's the junior prophets. The junior prophets are coming to Elijah over and over again. Apparently, everybody knew Elijah was going up, man. So these junior prophets kept telling him, don't you know? They're kind of like, you can just see the junior prophets pulling on his cloak. Don't you know, Elijah? He's going to go. It's almost like they're saying, worry with us, worry. Don't you understand? And what does he keep saying? Keep quiet. Yeah, I know all about that. Sometimes, the reason that distractions and distractors are so difficult is because they can bring you to a standstill. They can freeze you up. They make you forget what God has told you to do. And here's the deal. In the middle of this change, Elijah, he's presented with a number of choices. It's almost, not almost, I believe this is what the text is saying. Elisha is always presented here with the option of staying behind. Elijah asks him over and over again. He gives them the option to come along. He doesn't command him to stay. He gives them the option. It's as if Elijah is testing Elisha's resolve. And so Elisha has to decide over and over again, yep, this is the course I'm supposed to go on. Yep, I'm supposed to stay with Elijah. This is what God has told me to do. I'm going to keep doing it. Now, in the middle of a crisis of change, we will usually be presented with some choices as well. Okay? We'll be presented with opportunities to keep doing what God has told us to do or not. And if you stop and listen in the middle of some crisis or transition, often the Lord will give you something to do. He'll give you some course of action that he wants you to persevere on. It might be one thing or another, doesn't really matter, but he'll ask you often to continue to do something. Maybe it's maintain a godly attitude in the middle of this thing. Or maybe it's to continue to love this person. Or maybe it's just something as simple as your job is to pray in this crisis. But guys, here's what you got to do. You got to figure it out. You got to figure out what God is saying to you in the middle of your crisis or transition. In the middle of change, you got to understand what God is saying. Well, now, we're going to find out in a minute that if Elijah had stayed behind, if he said, Elijah says to Elisha, you can stay behind here. And Elisha says, well, yeah, that would be easier. I don't want to walk 14 miles. Yeah, I think I'll just stay behind. If he had done that, probably the outcome would have been a little different. But get this, crises, changes, transitions test our commitment. And it's commitment to what God has told us. Okay, here's what I want you to do, son. Here's what I want you to do, daughter. It tests our commitment. We got to make up our minds to do what God asks us to do and then stick with that as long as we know it's his direction. So Elisha, he's in the middle of a crisis here. The one thing that he knew, that God was saying, stick with Elijah. In fact, look at verses 2, 4, and 6 here. As surely as the Lord lives and you yourself live, I will never leave you. These words, by the way, as surely as the Lord lives, they were a formula that were very common in the Old Testament. They constituted a vow. When somebody says, as the Lord lives, that's an invitation for God to take note. So Elisha was saying to God, take note here, God. No way am I leaving Elijah. It's a vow. Godly men and women, what they do and have done throughout history, when there's some change, when there's some crisis, they decide what God is telling them to do, and then they keep doing it until God tells them not to do it. When we're in crisis or we're in change, the first order of business is to say, okay, God, what should be my focus here? What should be my focus in the middle of this transition, middle of this change? And then when you find that focus, then you persevere in it. You know, I've seen this happen so many times to good effect in marriages. Let's say a marriage is troubled. And that happens in marriages, doesn't it? There are seasons where marriages are troubled. And yet both those people know Christ. They know the Lord. And they say, as surely as the Lord lives. They don't say it that way these days, but that's really what they're saying. As surely as the Lord lives, I'm going to stick with my spouse and I'm going to let God work in me. And what's the result often of that when you stick with that? Over time, you come through that crisis. You come through that transition. You see it done in a new way. That's the first order of business when you're going through a crisis, okay? Man, it's so easy to mope around when things are about to change or things aren't, isn't it? It's kind of easy to mope around and kind of lose steam and kind of just, you know, okay, you know, I lost my job. This is a crisis. Okay, I should be doing all this stuff over here, but I'm so discouraged. I think I'll just watch reruns of Friends, okay? I mean, I don't know. I just, you know, oh, I moved in the area. I'm from Florida. I know it would really be great if I would just get out there and be assertive and meet friends and connect with God's people and actually form community, but it's so hard. I think I'll just sit here on the couch. You know, I mean, it's so easy to lose steam even when we know what we think what God has said to us. And sometimes our biggest problem is in a difficult time of change is just that. We know what God is doing, but we lose steam and we don't continue to do it. Guys, you never know what God will do if you are willing to stick with something. If you're willing to stick with what he's telling you to do, that's very, very powerful. There was an amazing story of a guy who does not claim to know God. In fact, he's not a Christian. But he says that's a great example of sticking with the direction until the desired result. And it's a guy named Kyle MacDonald. He was stuck in this dead-end job in Canada, and he really wanted a house, and he didn't own a house. And he decided he was going to start trading on the internet until he got a house. And he started, and by the way, as almost everything in modern culture today, you can find this on YouTube, okay? You just go and type in one red paperclip, because that's what he started with, one red paperclip. And he went on the internet and he traded it for a fish pen, a writing pen that was shaped in the shape of a fish. And he traded that for a doorknob. And this doorknob was unusual. It had kind of a face on it, you know, so it was an unusual. He traded that for a door. He traded the doorknob for a Coleman stove. He traded the Coleman stove for an old generator. He traded that generator for a case of beer and a Budweiser sign, okay? And then he traded that for a snowmobile. And so finally, 14 trades later, he traded a part, and it was a minor part, but it was a part in a Hollywood movie for a house in Saskatchewan, Canada. And that's all found in a book called One Red Paperclip. You can also go online and listen to it. But it's pretty incredible, isn't it? I mean, I think it illustrates the power of commitment, of sticking to a course of action until it bears results. And I believe that God often wants us to do something just like this, except, of course, for the Budweiser sign and the beer, okay? He wants us to keep persevering until it, man, it works. So in whatever change that we're going through, we stick with God's best. Now, that's the first thing that we see from Elijah, but there's a second thing in this story starting in verse 8. And the second commitment is this. We've got to commit ourselves to ask boldly, though limited understanding. Though we don't know everything, we can still ask. Look what it says in verse 8. Elijah took his cloak, rolled it up, struck the water with it. Now remember, they're still at the bank of the Jordan. The 50 prophets are still watching. And it says that Elijah took his cloak, rolled it up, struck the water. The water divided to the right and left. Two of them crossed over on dry land. And when they crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me, what can I do for you before I'm taken away?" "Let me inherit a double portion of your spirit," Elisha says. "You have asked a difficult thing," Elijah said. "Yet if you see me when I am taken from you, it will be yours, otherwise not." So Elijah finally gets where he's going. He's had a number of trips. He's walked many, many miles. And then he takes his coat, or his cloak, or as the old King James says, his mantle, and he rolls it up into a rod, and then he touches the water, and the water parts. Now, guys, there's no way that the original readers could have read this and not thought of Moses. Moses, the fantastic leader of Israel, had parted also the water. And so here's Elijah doing this very same thing. And then he tells Elisha, "What can I do for you?" Now, really what he's saying is, what do you want God to do for you? Because Elisha is clear that Elijah can't do anything for him. And he's really saying, listen, we're going through this transition. You're going through this change. What do you want from God? And there are some things that Elijah knew. Elijah knew that he was going to be Elijah's successor. He knew that, yes, he was going to be the number one prophet. But, guys, there were so many imponderables, so many uncertainties here. He didn't know, well, how is the transition going to go? How am I going to perform as a prophet? What would the future hold in all of this? Well, guys, in the same way, in the middle of change for us, we don't always know. Do we know all the answers in change? No way. Often, there are many uncertainties in our lives. But here's what I want you to remember. In the middle of those uncertainties, you can still ask, even when you don't know the whole story. You know, when I went to seminary, after I taught school and I'd pastored for a while, I went back to seminary. And when I went to seminary, this was back in a period of time when President Carter was the president. And so there was 12 to 16% interest. There was no job. There were no jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And so I went to Portland to go to seminary, and I thought, well, Lord, what do I need? Oh, I need $500 a month and a health care policy. Now, I want you to know that back then that was a little more than it is now, okay? A little more. So I went around to pastors and said, hey, I'm a seminary student. I've already had pastoral experience. I'm willing to minister, and all I need is $500 and a health care insurance. And I had one pastor tell me, it was a little like this, these junior prophets. He said, Art, listen, buddy, when you go to work part-time for a church, just think of it this way. You're going to be used and abused. Now, we're going to say 20 hours, but you're going to have to work 40 hours. And then we're going to pay you the very least that we can possibly pay you. That's what a guy told me. And I said, thank you. And I went away. Okay. Then I talked to others. And finally, within a couple months, what did I have? I had a job part-time, 20 hours, because I had to go to seminary full-time. Part-time, 20 hours for $500 a month and a healthcare bill. I didn't know all the answers. I didn't know how everything fit together, but I was willing to ask the Lord boldly. Notice that in this text, Elijah was ready with the request. You know, Elijah doesn't say, what do you want from God? He doesn't say, well, I don't know. No, he has a request already. And he says, I want a double portion of Elijah's spirit. Now, this phrase, double portion, has a pretty special meaning. It probably doesn't mean I want to be twice as powerful as Elijah. it probably comes from the fact that a firstborn child in that culture was, he got a double portion of an inheritance. And so what Elijah was asking is just, again, to be that firstborn, to be the next in line. He wanted to be Elijah's heir. He wanted to be God's number one prophet in Israel. So he was just asking God to affirm to the world what many of them already knew, that he would be the next prophet in Israel. He wanted, however, guys, that's a big responsibility, right? I'm going to be the number one prophet in Israel. That's a big responsibility. I think what he was also asking is, I want the power, the authority that goes with that so that I can perform in a way that will honor God and move in that direction. So he asked, what he was really asking Elijah, he was saying, would you grant me what I need to meet the responsibilities for the future? It was a big request. It was a bold request. He was saying, man, this is what I want to see in the middle of this. Bottom line, in the midst of change, we don't have to be afraid to ask boldly, even when we don't have all the answers. Guys, I want to confess something. 10 years ago, we opened this building. And when we opened this building, I thought, wow, big changes are about to come. I knew that. There's all kind of things. I had no idea what they would be. I had no idea what the growth would be or how we would touch people, etc. But I did know this. I probably was going to have to step up a little bit. I was going to have to step up to lead the church. And so what did I do? Well, I hid under the bed, actually. No, I didn't. What I did is I asked God. I got down on my knees and said, God, you've got to give me whatever I need to pastor the church in a way that would honor you, that would serve people, and where we would have a healthy body here that could really do a job for you. And did I know everything? No. But I said, God, this is what I really need. Now, what I want you to remember is that when you ask, so I want you to ask boldly in the midst of some change or crisis. You think about it. Okay, God, what is it that I should, yes, you've given me a focus, but how should I also pray? And don't be afraid to ask boldly. But just remember this. God doesn't always answer your prayers exactly as you wanted him to pray. It's that old series of sentences that we don't like very much. You know, I prayed for food, God gave me a tool. I prayed for shelter, God, you know, opened the skies. You know, I prayed for a car, God gave me a bus schedule, you know. you don't always get exactly what you're praying for, but God knows what's best. But we gotta pray boldly. We ought to be afraid of that. Now, that leads us to a third commitment. And we see it in Elijah here. Elisha, you've got to commit yourself to keep perspective even though you're distracted. Keeping perspective has a lot to do with how you see life, how you see events, how you evaluate a particular event that's going on or a series of events. Guys, when change is happening, let's admit it, people tend to freak out, right? Oh, man, this job is lost. They're running around like a chicken with their head cut off. They tend to believe the worst. Their thinking is skewed. They lose it. They get all spun up. But God wants us to keep what I could just call a biblical perspective. In other words, to see things with his eyes. Now, you're going to see that starting with verse 11. Look what it says. As they were walking along, talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire and horses appeared, separated the two of them. Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. Elisha saw this, cried out, my father, the chariots and horsemen of Israel. And Elisha saw him no more. Then he took hold of his own clothes and tore them apart. That's a sign of grief. He picked up the cloak that had fallen from Elijah, went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan. Then he took the cloak that had fallen from him and struck the water. Where now is the Lord, that's Yahweh, the God of Elijah? And when he'd struck the water, it divided the right and left, and he crossed over. Now, obviously, Elisha has already been potentially distracted by this group of junior prophets, right? Elijah, don't you know where he's going? You know, they tried to distract him. And now, of course, he's experienced the translation of his mentor. So he's potentially pretty distracted here. But there are two important perspectives you see in this text that Elijah would have been aware of and that Elijah would have participated in. The first perspective is God's power is not tied to a particular era. Just as Elijah had parted the water a few verses before this, now Elijah is parting the water. But friends, remember, there's no way the original readers would have been able to read this passage without thinking of Moses and Joshua. Moses parted the water, and then the mantle fell to him, the role fell to him, and now Joshua parts the water. So just like Moses and Joshua, now you have Elijah and Elisha. And what is this really saying? The God of 850 BC is the same God of 14 BC. In other words, 600 years had not mattered. God's power hadn't dried up and gone away. In other words, God's power is not tied to a particular era. Imagine people of this day. They might have said, well, you know what? We know all about Moses and Joshua, but that was a different time. You know, we're now in the Iron Age. They lived in the Bronze Age. We have different cultural problems today here in the Iron Age, and we have different political issues, and it's just so different than back in the Bronze Age. No, this passage says it doesn't matter. The God of the Bronze Age is the God of the Iron Age, is the God of the 21st century. Same God. Doesn't matter. God, by the way, is God still working today? You bet. Is he still saving people? Is he still protecting believers from the evil one? Is he still doing all of that? Are people's lives being changed? Yeah, absolutely. Guys, let's not go back 20, 30 years and look for something. Let's not go back and say, I wish it was like when I was 20. Let's not go back thinking about 100 years. Wouldn't 100 years back would have been so much better than it is now? We're serving the same God. The historical God is the contemporary God. Same God. And he's still at work and his power is still available. Okay, the car needs a new transmission. I still got the same providing God that they had back then. Okay, I'm going through this difficulty. This relationship is rocky. But the same God who changed people in those days, he can work in my heart to change me so that this relationship can be all that it can be. Okay, the culture we live in is coarsening. It's getting worse and worse. But the same God who protected God's people in the first century can protect us and move with us. Guys, that's just called an eternal perspective. And you see it here. Now, there's a second perspective, and that is that God's power is not limited to a certain instrument. Elijah picked up the cloak. He picked up the cloak, and he parted the water. He says, where now is the God of Elijah? So it's not where is Elijah, but where is the Lord, the God of Elijah? In other words, it's not God, it's not Elijah that it's important, it's God. So it's not one person. We shouldn't think of, oh, without that person, we're lost. Now, there are many people who are very important and they do much work. But there's no one person who is indispensable. It's only God who's indispensable. Listen, if we know that, if we keep perspective, it'll help keep us on track. It'll help keep us on task. But if we forget this perspective, what happens is we begin to go in all kinds of weird directions in the middle of our change, the middle of our crisis or whatever it is. Guys, a biblical godly perspective about life is so important, you know? And so what does Elisha do? He understands he has the right perspective, so he's able to maintain his focus. He's able to maintain what God wants him to do. And he's simply doing everything that he could do, and then he's asking God to do other things. Now, a lot of problems with making a transition, a lot of things that go wrong in the middle of that, has to do with the fact that you don't maintain a godly perspective. Now, no matter who or what is distracting you, you've got to remember there is a God in heaven who does not change. He does not change. And you can count on him just like they counted on him then. Now, that brings us to a fourth commitment. And the fourth commitment is simply this. We need to commit ourselves to act in faith, though in pain or struggling with loss. Guys, sometimes we are brought to a low point in the middle of a crisis. Isn't that true? Have you ever felt that? I'm right in the middle of this change, and right in the middle of this crisis, right in the middle of this transition, and everything looks bad. That's a low point. Well, you see that low point in verse 11 and 12. Here's Elijah. They're walking along. God's chariots come and swing low, and they pick up Elijah. And Elijah's translated to heaven. But look at his response. Look at Elisha's response. My father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen. Now, in those days, chariots and horsemen were the most powerful military weapons of the day. And so what he's really saying here is, man, Elijah is Israel's best military weapon, and he's gone. It's over. He's away. You remember, if you want an example of that power, just go to 1 Kings 18 and see what Elijah has done on Mount Carmel to the prophets of Baal, okay? It's pretty powerful. So he says, man, look, this awesome display of power that God uses to protect Israel, it's gone. And then he also says, my father, you know, because he had a personal relationship with him. He was his mentor. But so all the power of Israel, he says, he thinks are gone. It'd be like an American president saying, oh, man, Army, Navy, Air Force, they just went up in smoke. That's what Elisha is saying. And so here he is at this low point. And I know that many of you have been at a low point in a crisis or transition. And where you think, everything has changed. How is it all going to work out? But look again at verse 13. He picked up the cloak that had fallen from Elijah. And he went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan, and he took that cloak that had fallen and struck the water in it. Look what he says. Where now is the Lord, the God of Elijah? Elijah could have stayed in this kind of broken condition and just walked away. But eventually, he pulls himself together, he looks around, and then he notices two things. Here's what he notices. Ah, I did see Elijah go up in the whirlwind. Do you remember what that means? I did see Elijah go up. What does it mean? Ah, you are going to be granted your bold prayer. Because if you see me go up, that means God says you get the prayer answered. And also notice that Elisha notices Elijah's cloak, which was a symbol of the power of his ministry. So all I'm saying is the solutions were in sight. God had shown him that Elijah go away, which means that he had granted his prayer request, and he had the symbol of his power right at his feet. Now, guys, Elijah might have, I like to think of what if. You know, you read Old Testament stories and even New Testament stories and think, what if? What if Elisha, now he's seen Elijah go up, and now he just kind of walks away and goes, man, God, you took the best weapon we had. I don't understand what you're doing. You know, I don't know what to do. How can it all work out? I don't even know what's happening. What are you doing, God? This is terrible. Okay, now, guys, he could have done that. He could have done that. But instead of this what if, you know, even in the midst of his pain, even in the midst of his sorrow, he acted in belief. What did he do? He picks up that mantle, and then he does something with it. Often, those situations that appear as if they are the end turned out to be the beginning. Now, guys, I've been a pastor too long to give you hackneyed cliches, all right? So when I say when something is the end, it appears to be the end, it's often the beginning, I'm not just giving you a little cliche. I've seen it over and over and over again in my life. Often what we think is the end is often the beginning. You know, I was interested a few years ago about reading about a pastor. His name was Michael Milley, and he pastored a church, one of the churches that were scattered by Hurricane Katrina in 2005. And his normal church, normally his church was 3,000 people. So the first service they had after Hurricane Katrina, it was 300 people. And it was quite an emotional sermon, but Millie offered a unique Christian perspective on what had happened. Here's what he said. We have successfully planted people all over the United States. You know, I just think that's great. I think it's great because, guys, he's understood that, well, this is not the end. Not only does it show perspective, but again, it's a willingness to pick up the mantle, to pick up the cloak and get busy. What looks like the end can be a beginning. We've got to see God's controlling hand in the events of our day, the events of our lives. Yes, we grieve when things are lost. We grieve when things are difficult. And yet we look for God's solutions. We look for, we act in faith when we see the opening. We try to look for God's open doors. And what happens in this case? Elijah picks up the cloak. Well, that's all he had to do. Wow. Here's the symbol of power. Here it is. Now, Elijah stands on the bank of the Jordan. And I want you to visualize this with me. Here's Elijah. Now, remember this group of 50 prophets? Man, they're all up there watching. What is going on? What is going on? And they see Elijah. He's at the bank of the Jordan River. He knows what God has said. He hasn't fully seen the answer yet, though. Do you think he experienced a little trace of anxiety when he picked up that cloak? Okay, God. I saw Elijah. I saw him go up. Do you think he was wondering what else was going to happen? I can see him just thinking, standing on that bank, just thinking about all that had happened, thinking about the transition, thinking about it all. And then what does he say? You see it right here. Where now is the Lord, Yahweh, the God of Elijah? In other words, God, you told me to believe you. You told me, you promised me, this is going to be here for me. Now I believe it. Now I'm acting upon it. And so just like Elijah had lowered the cloak, he lowered it, believing in what God was going to do. And the transition then is over. It's complete. God's power and presence are now with Elijah as they were with Elijah. And because Elijah moved through a difficult crisis, how did he do it? Man, he did it by persevering. He did it by keeping perspective. He did it by not being afraid to ask boldly. And he did it by acting in faith. Guys, in the same way, many of you are facing something going on. And if you're not facing it now, you're going to face it later. Believe me, tomorrow you're going to be in this crisis if you're not in it today. Even pastors face crisis sometimes. None of us knows when something is going to interrupt our lives. It could be the loss of a job. It could be the loss of resources of some kind. It could be marital separation, just some pain that's going on. And I want to encourage you. Guys, doesn't matter how old you are. Doesn't matter what your experience is. You can have God's best in the midst of change. Even in the difficulties and the downers downers that are going on. If you can get your eyes on the Lord, God wants you to give His strength in the midst of whatever is going on. And like Elisha, you may be looking at what seems to be your protection going up in smoke right now. Man, Elijah just went up in a whirlwind. You may think that too. Oh, all of my protection is going up in a whirlwind. And yet, perhaps this isn't the end. Perhaps this is just the beginning of something that God wants to do in your life. Listen, your commitment in a time like that, here it is. Persevere, keep perspective, ask boldly, act in faith. And I know that the Lord will help you then to get His best in the middle of whatever's going on in your life.
We trust you are inspired and challenged by this message. For additional resources and information about Lighthouse Christian Center and its ministries, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org or contact us at 253-848-2028.